I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio. Welcome to Fronteras, a show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. Experts say there's a model for Texas to follow on how to reduce maternal deaths in the state. California found a way to reduce its rate by half in just a few years. But even though California's rate is drastically lower these days, it didn't solve one huge problem, the race gap. Black women are up to four times more likely to die while pregnant or after giving birth. KUT's Ashley Lopez brings us the final report in her maternal mortality series.
Maddie Oden lives in Oakland, California. About 17 years ago, her daughter, Tasha Oden French, was pregnant with her first child. She was 32 years old.
She was African-American. She had just gotten her PhD. She was getting ready to go into medical school, actually. She had been a vegetarian for way over 15 years. She was totally healthy. The baby was totally healthy.
But Tasha was about 10 days overdue. And Oden says Tasha's doctors wanted to induce labor.
She didn't want to be induced. She wanted a natural birth. And they put a lot of pressure on her, specifically saying, well, you don't want to go home with a dead baby, do you?
Eventually, Tasha was given a drug used to induce labor.
And 10 hours after they gave it to her, she was dead and the baby was dead. And so I decided that I was going to focus on, you know, getting the drug out of the toolbox of induction.
Maddie Oden does that work now through a foundation she created with her daughter's name. Oden also became a doula and works predominantly with Black women. She says she sees what happened to her Black daughter happen to a lot of her clients.
It's a very common type of attitude, disrespect, you know, total disregard for what the mom wants. They want you to do what they want you to do.
Oden says this is all rooted in racism, which, of course, makes these problems facing Black mothers really hard to fix. Oden says even though California has cut its overall maternal mortality rate in half,
there's still a tremendous amount of work to be done, even in California. And then again, quite frankly, it depends on who you are and how dark your skin is.
Nationwide, Black women are about four times more likely to die while pregnant or shortly after giving birth. In Texas, Black women make up 11% of all births in the state, but they accounted for almost 30% of all maternal deaths. And even though California was able to successfully bring down its maternal death rate, that gap between Black women and white women remained.
In California, our African-American rate fell similarly to our overall rate, fell in half. But at the end of the day, it was still three times higher.
That's Elliot Main with the California Maternal Quality Care Collaborative. He's based at Stanford University and has been largely credited with leading the effort that brought down the maternal mortality rates in California. He says the disparity between deaths among Black and white women is not just alarming and hard to fix, it's also a unique problem.
That is the biggest racial disparity among any public health measure. You know, we pay attention to infant mortality. We look at prematurity rates. We look at cancer deaths. Those are all higher in African Americans in general.
Those rates, Maine says, are 1.5 to 2 times higher among Black people. Maternal mortality is 3 to 4 times higher. And in New York City, for example, it's up to 12 times higher.
And this is a disgrace and a national imperative that we really have to address that.
Maine says California is starting some pilot programs aimed at closing the gap. And it's going to be tough. Advocates who pay a lot of attention to this issue say this isn't about specific health issues like hypertension. It's about a much thornier issue, racism.
This is mostly my bag.
This is Darlene Turner. She lives here in Austin. She's a physician's assistant turned doula. She showed me the bag she takes to hospitals and birthing centers when her clients go into labor.
I have, you know, the patient's chart. Or, you know, notes for whatever. I have the ball, pump, a towel, a spare shirt, because sometimes stuff splatters.
The ball she mentioned is this yoga ball that women can lean on or lean against or bounce on while they're in labor. Turner says it helps. She got interested in being a doula several years ago. It all started with her own tough pregnancy.
you know, we had some spotting, we had cramping, we had, you know, I'd lost one before her. We had so many different things going on.
Then Turner says she went into labor with her daughter early, and that presented another set of problems because Turner recently had uterine surgery.
So I was at great risk for uterine rupture, so we were playing beat the baby to get the baby out.
Turner says giving birth was an overwhelming experience. She says she felt bad for her husband, who had no idea what was going on.
And he was just standing there watching this just cacophony of instruments being thrown, baby being whisked away, wife throwing up and being gassed because I was just, like, kind of crazed, and there was no one there.
Turner became a doula because she wants to be in the room helping people through deliveries, particularly Black mothers like her.
You know, now doing doula work, it's interesting sometimes the things that I will sometimes hear come out of healthcare providers' mouth, and I'll turn, like, did you really say that to her? And then it's kind of like, oh, but because I think when I turn, then it's like, ooh, wait, you know.
And then sometimes medical professionals don't really listen to Black women, she says. Turner tells me about a client she had who was pregnant with twins. She was feeling bad a lot throughout her pregnancy. In fact, she went to the emergency room 22 times.
Who goes to the ER 22 times? After two or three, you admit her and like, why are you here again?
But the hospital didn't admit her. Each time, she says, they sent her home and said,
you're just, you know, you're having twins. You're just being, you know, alarmist, whatever, whatever. And she died.
Turner says if Texas wants to do something about maternal mortality among Black women, it's going to take a shift in how the medical community treats Black women. Because Turner says it's going to be hard to fix the small things without that shift.
I mean, it's not that hard. Treat people kindly. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Unlike most of what we have to learn from California's success in decreasing maternal mortality, there's no framework on how to make these changes. I mean, how do you get rid of racism in medicine if we haven't figured out how to get rid of it in practically any other sphere of society? Maddie Oden back in California says to prevent another woman like her daughter from dying, it's essential.
The disparities exist and will continue to exist until racism in the medical institution, along with the other institutions in this country, is, you know, significantly addressed and reversed, which is not going to happen tomorrow.
So far, Texas's Maternal Mortality Task Force doesn't have specific recommendations on how to close the racial gap in the state. However, according to the group's most recent report, a good place to look is hospitals. Researchers found that Black women were twice as likely to die following a pregnancy-related hospital stay. The task force's next report is expected this summer. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
Coming up next on Fronteras, composer Federico Chavez Blanco blends the tradition of quinceañera and mariachis in his musical Cenicienta.
There was nothing that connected to their own tradition, their own language, their own race.
That story and bridging the internet gap in South Texas when we come back. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to Fronteras. The Texas-Mexico border is one of the least internet-connected areas in the U.S. A Federal Reserve map shows border counties bathed in red, meaning less than 60% have home access. Texas Public Radio's tech reporter Paul Flav says the border city of Far launched a program to break up that line.
When Brandon Marquez has a school assignment like a research paper, he hunkers down in the school library. When that closes at 5 p.m., his mom drives him 20 minutes to the Far Public Library, where he can work on a public computer for 2 hours or until 9:30 p.m.
When you have, like, limited time, I mean, you have to just go quickly. And sometimes you don't do the work correctly, so, I mean, that's, like, a disadvantage.
If the junior at Far San Juan Alamo Southwest Early College High School still has more to do, he goes to a restaurant with free Wi-Fi.
Like Jack in the Box, even Burger King. I mean, just buy like a soda or a burger just to have the time there.
Marquez is in the Gifted and Talented program. His teacher says he gets good grades, and he's just one of tens of thousands of students along the border with no internet access in their homes. But that may change. The city of Far and PSJA School District are connecting 50 homes to broadband internet for free as a pilot program for something much larger. District Superintendent Daniel King says with textbooks going online, students submitting homework through the web platform Blackboard, and required online discussions, web access is a necessity for the modern student.
I would equate it to 100 years ago trying to get electricity and telephone to everyone's homes.
This small city, just a handful of miles from the border, is trying to break up the dark red line of disconnectedness that plagues the region. Many parts of FAR are colonias, or neighborhoods that developed along the border with substandard housing and lacking basic infrastructure like paved roads, water, and indoor plumbing. FAR has absorbed many colonias into the city and addressed infrastructure issues, but the internet?
It's intermittent, it's not available in all areas, and then there's a cost factor also.
Drew Lentz drives through Las Milpas, a former colonia that's now the focus of the FAR broadband project.
We'll find one. There's one up here on the corner.
He points out a house in the pilot program.
Yeah, well, let's go this way. Let's keep off their property.
A 3-foot metal arm protrudes from the house, and on the end, a flat rectangular piece of plastic about half the size of an iPad hangs. Lentz's company, Frontera, installs the devices for the city of FAR. The city offers the internet for free, and the school district provides free devices. It seems like a good deal, but Lentz says it was hard to get parents to talk to them about signing up.
For whatever reason, it might be their immigration status, it might be, you know, a warrant status, it might be, you know, something as simple as they just don't want to communicate with anyone. Maybe there's a language barrier that can't be bridged.
Back in the truck, we drive past houses that you could find in any middle-class Texas neighborhood alongside abandoned or ramshackle homes. On one street, dogs, cats, and chickens run freely past a small grocery built into a house.
This street's a little bit rougher than the other streets.
Crime is an issue in this neighborhood, says Lentz, and they do not do installs after dark at the request of the school district.
Here, I just got a really dirty look back. I had tattoos all over his neck.
Lentz says even when they do find a home that wants the service, the structure of the house sometimes can't support the 3-pound wireless receiver.
The wood on the house, on the structure, was so bad that we had to use different sets of screws and bits to get into the masonry of it to make sure that we could get a proper mount.
70% of Las Milpas use the SNAP program. Nearly half live under the federal poverty line, according to the Census Bureau. Joanna Barton works for the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas and grew up in a colonia like Las Milpas. She says all of these problems, access to health care, workforce training, access to a bank account, and student education, benefit from internet access.
This is actually an area where we could intervene and have a major impact on every area of community development.
Barton didn't always feel this way, though. 3 years ago, she was doing a study for the Fed on how to improve life in the colonias. Public meeting after public meeting, she kept hearing the same thing. While she was trying to talk to them about roads and water,
every county that I went to, the parents who I was interviewing were talking to me about their kids not having internet access and how important that was to their education.
These first 50 homes in FAR are just an opening salvo. According to public documents, the city is planning something much bigger. With the help of the Federal Reserve, banks like BBVA Compass, and the school district, it will build its own fiber optic network. By connecting all of its government buildings, it can make sure it's near those low-income neighborhoods. Then they can potentially expand free Wi-Fi offerings and explore leasing the fiber to internet providers who can sell low-cost internet to these communities.
It's not going to be a one-size-fits-all where Google Fiber is going to come in and provide fiber to the home for all the colonias or for all the neighborhoods in FAR.
With FAR as the proof of concept, Barton says every colonia in the valley is next.
Yes, it covers the whole border and hundreds of thousands of people.
And if it can be tackled in the valley, she says, there's no reason it can't be done in rural Minnesota or Appalachia. Back at Southwest Early College High School, Marquez hopes his home will be included in the free broadband at some point. His whole life, he's never had it in his house. When asked what it would mean to him, he says, it would be like getting a gift. Paul Flav, Texas Public Radio News.
The city of San Antonio is hosting its tricentennial in 2018, and the celebrations have a soundtrack. The city commissioned local composer Federico Chavez Blanco to write music for various events, including a major orchestral and theatrical work to be revealed in the near future. We spoke to Chavez Blanco about the tricentennial commission.
Well, I've been a music provider, an artist for the city for many years. I was commissioned earlier to compose another ballet for the American 40 Arts Convention. And I started chatting around, having a personal signature, musical signature, and then we started talking about the diversity as far as musical genres in San Antonio. And that's when the idea came, and the Department for Arts and Culture took me by the hand with the project. It's not a collection of 30-something tracks, but it's the sequence of colors, rhythms, and musical signatures. We've been trying to cover all the bases. We did it very well to fulfill all the requests as far as genre, styles, cultures.
And listening to some of the samples of the music you composed for the Tricentennial, there is a lot of Mexican influence, a little bit of mariachi. The instrumentation has quite a bit of trumpet to it. What did you look to as far as the inspiration for the music that you were writing for the Tricentennial? Were you looking for primarily a Hispanic tinge to the music?
Well, we live in a city that is Hispanic in a high percentage. When you mention San Antonio to someone, that's the first memory they have, the river, the mariachi music. So what we wanted was to balance those representations of the art, the classical stuff, the pop stuff. We have a very, very, very well-established pop community. We've been named Texas music-friendly city very recently due to a very hard labor from the Film Commission and Music Commission also. It's putting us in the spot in Texas music because we have a strong community. So what we wanted to do, the commercial representation, this music is intended to work as a music bed in all the events.
There's a work that you did recently called Cenicienta, had to do with mariachis, had to do with quinceañeras. Could you tell us a little bit more about that production? Because it garnered you quite a bit of fame here in San Antonio.
Oh, thank you. It's a musical that portrays one of the most beautiful Hispanic traditions. So you can visit Philippines and you can go to Argentina and they'll have their quinceañera a representation where all the family gets together to celebrate the coming of age of a teenager girl.
List? Royal court? Get food? Dresses? And boys? I can't wait to see what they'll pick out. It should be my key.
And I was approached by a former San Antonio Independent School District music teacher, Pam Redman. She realized that when it came to the UIL musicals or the drama theater or the drama companies at the schools, they were only working with the standards, Oklahoma's, West Side Stories, but there was nothing that connected to their own tradition, their own language, their own race. She found that the quinceañeras where all the family gets together. You know, you bring the tías, the tíos, the abuelitos, the friends, the cousins. The work is just celebrate that tradition with mariachi music, and it's written in a manner, in a Greek style, that sometimes the mariachi is the narrator, sometimes the mariachi is a main part in the musical, and sometimes it's just the background music. It's intended to give you just a flavor of what's our tradition. And the funny thing is, when I started reading the book, I connected with every single character there because I know someone like this. This is like my cousin. This, you have everybody well represented there.
I've been waiting all my life.
Federico Chavez Blanco is a native of Mexico and a San Antonio resident who has experience writing for television and film. He's recently been commissioned to compose the music for this year's San Antonio Tricentennial Celebrations. He composed the musical Cenicienta, a quinceañera with a taste of Cinderella, a mariachi tribute to a Hispanic family tradition. His music can also be heard on telenovelas such as Azul Tequila and Señora, and on a number of films and documentaries. And that's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Fronteras is also available for download as a podcast. Norma Martinez and Jerry Quijano produced this broadcast. Our executive producers are Steve Short and Fernando Ortiz. Our digital editor is Vince Kong. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.